Good evening, I'm John Chancellor, NBC News in Washington, and here is the news. The United States this afternoon swung toward a harder line on the Middle East as the Egyptians indicated they may be willing to continue the ceasefire along the Suez Canal. Egyptian Foreign Minister Mahmoud Riyad said in Cairo today that if Egypt had proof of sincere efforts to get the peace talks underway again, then Egypt would agree to an extension of 90 days on the present ceasefire. But at the same time, Riyad said the Egyptians had not cheated on the peace plan by moving missiles near the canal. And he said also that Egypt will not remove any missiles now in place. The American view of this is that forbidden missiles have been moved in and that the Egyptians are guilty of serious and continuing violations of the ceasefire. Because of that, the State Department today said it was breaking off the current talks on the Middle East being held in New York by the deputies of the Big Four ambassadors.
The United States, in effect, accused the Egyptians and the Russians of bad faith in accepting a standstill ceasefire and then violating it. The U.S. also made clear its official position that Middle East peace talks cannot be resumed unless there is some rectification of the violations. But the State Department still declined to spell out precisely what it means by rectification. The U.S. underlined its position by suspending the Big Four deputy meetings. Washington does not regard the Big Four talks as very productive anyway, and the American Peace Initiative does not depend on them. The U.S. will attend the next Big Four ambassadors meeting on Monday as scheduled. But unless there is some sign from the Egyptians by then that they are willing to move back their missiles, the United States is expected to announce it sees no reason to continue the Big Four talks themselves at any level. Richard Valeriani, NBC News at the State Department.
The White House said this afternoon that President Nixon will observe the 25th anniversary of the United Nations by going there to make a speech on October 23rd. The next night, the president will give a dinner at the White House for whatever chiefs of state are at the UN.
This is NBC Nightly News, Tuesday, October 6, 1970. Brought to you by Homelite, world's largest manufacturer of chainsaws, and their 7,000 dealers coast to coast.
Clean up with a Homelite chainsaw. Clean up with a lightweight Homelite chainsaw.
It's cleanup time. Time to clean up storm damage, cut down unwanted trees, clear out brush and saplings, cut up a good supply of winter firewood. Do all this with ease with a fast-cutting, lightweight Homelite chainsaw.
Clean up with a Homelite chainsaw. Clean up with a lightweight Homelite chainsaw.
President Nixon returned from Europe last night at 8:30. Tomorrow night at 9 Eastern Time, he will go on national television to speak about Vietnam. He said his address will include a major new proposal for the Paris peace talks. The president made an unusual appearance before White House cameras today advertising his talk.
It will be the most comprehensive statement ever made on this subject since the beginning of this very difficult war. Comprehensive geographically, it will not be limited to Vietnam. It will cover all of Southeast Asia. Also comprehensive in terms of subject matter. It will not be limited to any one of the particular subjects that you have mentioned in your speculation, but will cover all of the major issues that are involved in the Southeast Asian area. Finally, I would like to indicate that we do not consider this to be a propaganda gimmick. We are not saying it simply for the record. An indication of our attitude in that respect is that I have instructed Ambassador Bruce to lay this proposal on the table at the Paris conference on Thursday morning when he meets with the negotiators from North Vietnam and the Viet Cong.
Whatever proposal Mr. Nixon makes on Wednesday night will be known around the world by Thursday when the Vietnam peace negotiators in Paris meet for their regular session. The best guessing in Washington this afternoon is that the president will propose some kind of ceasefire.
A ceasefire fits in with current U.S. military policy in Vietnam. American forces, it is hoped, can be withdrawn as rapidly as possible. And the umbrella of safety provided by a ceasefire would hasten the pullout. While the initial U.S. reaction to the 8-point plan proposed by the Viet Cong 2 weeks ago was negative, it has been restudied. No longer is it seen as old wine in new bottles. The Viet Cong is willing to stop attacking American forces if Washington agrees to have them all out of Vietnam by the end of next June. Even if Mr. Nixon does not accept a firm date for the completion of the pullout, he now seems willing to bargain for an agreement to stop the shooting, paving the way for what everyone seems to agree is the only way out of Vietnam, a political rather than a military solution. Robert Goralski, NBC News at the Pentagon.
South Vietnam's Vice President Nguyen Cao Ky is in Paris today, but was ordered to return to Saigon immediately when the news of President Nixon's talk was announced. In Cambodia today, the enemy is still attacking a large Cambodian task force near the village of Tang Kok, north of Phnom Penh. American jet bombers attack the enemy positions with cluster bombs and napalm. And in the Cambodian capital itself, there are more refugees.
A new group of Vietnamese refugees has arrived in Phnom Penh. The refugees, more than 450 of them, are members of Vietnamese fishing families who live near the village of Bac Pre, about 160 miles northwest of Phnom Penh. They were moved to a refugee camp in the capital after Cambodian bombing attacks on their villages. The circumstances of the attacks are under investigation by both the Cambodian and South Vietnamese governments. A Cambodian spokesman said the bombings were necessary to fight Vietnamese communist troops in the area. He said no civilians were killed. A South Vietnamese spokesman said he had information that several civilians were killed. He expressed concern whether the Cambodian planes took proper precautions to keep from hitting civilians. The refugees said when Cambodian planes began bombing around Bac Pre, they became frightened and ran away. They said the next day the planes dropped bombs near them again and sunk a Cambodian villager's boat loaded with rice. After that, they said they traveled only at night until the government rounded them up and brought them to Phnom Penh. Only one of the refugees who arrived here was wounded during the bombings. But there were several thousand villagers in the Bac Pre area. What happened to many of them is still unknown. Kenley Jones, NBC News, Phnom Penh.
A civil war has broken out in Bolivia. Following the classic pattern of these things, the president, Alfredo Avanda Candia, resigned under pressure from a military junta. This set off a competition between leftists and rightists. The Air Force, which is against the rightist junta, today began bombing and strafing the presidential palace in La Paz, along with other rightist strongholds in the city. The junta forces have replied with anti-aircraft fire, and the whole situation is a mess.
I'm Cherise. Now, I'm not going to tell you my age because I don't look it. You know, the best way not to look your age is to do something about it. I do. I take good care of myself. I exercise, try and eat the right food, get plenty of rest, and to make sure I get enough iron and vitamins, I take a Geritol tablet every day. Geritol. Tony says he thinks it's the nicest thing a girl can do for herself.
Tony who?
Geritol, liquid or tablets, every day.
What's that buzzing, an electric razor?
In a barber shop?
Sure, Williams Electric Shave makes whiskers stand up, evaporates perspiration, gives a non-irritating shave.
Gotcha! Feels barber close with an electric razor when you use...
or cooling frost lime.
Transportation Secretary John Volpe indicated today that there may have been some wrongdoing in the crash last week of a charter airplane which took the lives of 30 people connected with the Wichita State football team. Federal Aviation Agency officials were saying today that the plane may have been taken out of mothballs just before the flight, that its engines may not have been powerful enough, and that the crew may not have had enough mountain flying experience.
plane crashed near Loveland Pass. Beautiful scenery, and that's apparently why the pilot chose to fly at low altitude, to give the team the scenic tour. That doesn't mean it was necessarily pilot error. It may have been equipment. Searchers began removing wreckage yesterday, but it is difficult work. Most of the instruments were melted in the fire. The Martin 404 was owned by Jack Richards Incorporated of Oklahoma City, but Wichita State University leased it and hired the crews to fly the plane from another Oklahoma firm, Golden Eagle. The man who handled all the arrangements was the school athletic director, but he died in the crash. So it is difficult to find out just how thoroughly Wichita State checked into the aircraft it leased and of the qualifications of the men hired to fly them. The engines were brought to a Denver hangar today. They will be analyzed to see what, if any, mechanical failure might have brought on the crash. Some witnesses reported a power failure before the plane went down. The engine should provide more information. The second plane, the plane that didn't crash, was impounded by the FAA in Logan, Utah. It, too, had been in mothballs. It was owned by the Jack Richards firm and flown by Golden Eagle Company pilots. But both the pilot and the co-pilot have disappeared. Nobody can find them now. The Jack Richards Company insists that both planes were checked out by the FAA in September when they were removed from storage. But an FAA spokesman said they were not approved for the kind of use they got.
These aircraft had been in storage, and they were flyable under what we term a ferry permit that in effect makes it possible for the owner to take the equipment and get it to a repair base. The ferry permit does not authorize the owner to use it in public carriage of people.
What about the medical certificates of the pilots involved?
The medical certificate of the airplane that made the successful flight from Wichita State to Logan, Utah is subject to question. There is doubt that he is properly medically certificated, and we are running those facts down.
In Wichita, 12,000 turned out last night at the school stadium. It was a memorial service for those killed in the crash.
Such a tragedy. This community expresses their gratitude and thanks to each one of them. We shall always remember and be grateful. And of all of us here, not one is so remote that he does not share the pain and want to lessen it for the families, the friends, and the loved companions of each. This loss touches and diminishes us all.
It is known that the plane which crashed was not licensed to carry passengers. The president of Wichita State said this afternoon that, to his knowledge, the school never received any warning about the airline charter company from the Federal Aviation Agency.
Country. Big, white, wet. Up here you don't fool around. You learn how to take care of yourself in a hurry. The last thing you want is a head cold. When you get one, you want early cold symptom control. You want Contact. Contact is not a cold tablet. Instead, 600 tiny time pills inside each capsule give you a decongestant, an antihistamine, and a special drying agent. For up to 12 full hours, Contact helps clear up your nasal passages, control your sneezing, and dry your runny nose. Take care of yourself. Get early cold symptom control. Take Contact, the head cold medicine.
The Ohio National Guard has asked the Army to supply it with short-range, non-lethal arms in the wake of the criticism stemming from the Kent State disaster. But Adjutant General Sylvester Del Corso said today that the Ohio Guard units would continue to carry high-powered rifles and load them on command. Undercover Treasury agents in Danville, Illinois, have seized enough explosives to blow up three city blocks, which they bought from a gang of young men from downstate Illinois. The Treasury men pretended to be left-wing radical bombers. One of the downstaters seemed more of a Nazi, they said, but he said in the end it was the color of the money which counted. Here in Washington, attacks upon policemen have become a red-hot political item, and there were hearings today in a Senate Internal Security Subcommittee.
Thus far this year, 20 policemen have been killed and scores more injured in sniping, bombing, and other sneak attacks. Subcommittee Chairman James Eastland of Mississippi said there's a nationwide conspiracy that amounts to guerrilla warfare against law and order. Deputy Attorney General Charles O'Brien of California testified the danger is growing because some militant groups are becoming better armed than the police.
I brought a few examples of military weapons which we have seized from militants in California. This is a knee mortar. I could have brought larger weapons. We have a full stock of 60 and 81 millimeter mortars which we have confiscated from terrorist groups in California. Hand grenades, which we are taking from. I brought them here as terrifying proof of the problem. These weapons were seized from terrorist groups in California. In the early 1960s, we were getting them from right-wing groups. At the present time, we're taking them from left-wing groups. These are examples. Gentlemen, we have an arsenal in California now, in our State Department of Justice, of weapons which we have seized from terrorist groups who have been attacking our police officers. The effect of this terrorism is difficult to determine. It doubtless affects our entire society. It enforces fear in Americans. It invites repression. And that is exactly what it is meant to do. It is meant to create a frightened and repressive society.
O'Brien and other witnesses called for new federal laws to toughen penalties against domestic terrorism. Paul Duke, NBC News, Washington.
The Nixon administration really recently adopted a policy which limited the amount of federal education money which could be used to provide clothing for poor children. Today, under various pressures, the administration dropped that limitation. A report submitted to the Congress today shows that the children who need education the most are getting the least. That an average of 33% of inner-city taxes are spent on education, while the white suburbs spend 56%. The bipartisan commission which drew up the report said the only answer to the problem is for the federal government to pick up the tab for all welfare and medical help for poor people programs and let the individual state spend some of that extra money on inner city education. In some states, there is the additional problem of aspirations of minorities in conflict with old established patterns.
Willie Curry has changed since he left Homer, Louisiana several years ago to join the Marines. He spent 38 months in Vietnam. He lived for a time in California, where he got to know the Black Panthers. Now, he is back from the war, back from California.
When you're in Vietnam, you feel as if maybe somehow things will get better. But when I come back to home and I found things like this, you know, it was hard to accept. And the Marine Corps promised, well, we're going to build you into a man. But then when you come back home, they expect that long on manhood to expire. And you're supposed to go back to the South and shuffle and smile and be a regular old boy.
But if Curry changed, he found that Homer had not, at least not very much. It's an old southern town in northwest Louisiana, half black, half white, ruled by whites. A town which once depended on oil. But now the oil is nearly all gone, and the town is slowly dying. There's little to do in Homer. The parish, or county, has lost a third of its population in 20 years. Unemployment is high. The biggest payroll in the town is welfare. 40% of the people are on relief. But Willie Curry refused to accept Homer as he found it. He helped the older civil rights leaders begin a new campaign of marches and demonstrations. Curry has not been getting along with the older black leadership. They say he doesn't take orders, but it might be that he's too militant. The parish is 60% black, but the registered voters are 60% white. So Curry has been conducting a one-man registration drive.
The Negroes in Homer were protesting a number of grievances, job discrimination, police brutality, especially by black officers, and then what many of them considered the last straw, segregated classes in a school that was supposed to be integrated. The big trouble started last spring when a march ended in violence and many arrests. Then began what white officials called a black reign of terror.
The whites said that over a period of several months, there were 52 cases of arson, mostly empty buildings, and dozens of false alarms. Black leaders say some of the burnings might have been done by whites and blamed on the blacks. During the same period, several white homes were fired into, and a white youth shot a black youth in the leg. 17 blacks were arrested, most of them active in the civil rights movement. That was 3 months ago, and 9 are still in jail. Shields were put over the windows of the jail because, whites said, the blacks were yelling obscenities at passers-by. There's been no trouble in Homer since the arrests, and even the public schools have quietly integrated. Half the town's white children stayed. The blacks outnumber them by more than 2-1. Curry found a new school outside of Homer, a private one. Half the white children in Homer go to the new school.
These few militants that came in had been other places, and they came back, and where they've been, it wasn't the same way at home. I imagine that the nigger wants to better his race, and I think he's entitled to better his race. And I think we as white people can help him.
We can work this thing out. We got people here in the world that's too smart. We've been to the moon. We've taken the heart out of one man and put into another man. We can do every kind of thing. We got all kind of records that America has accomplished, everything. And you mean to tell me that the only thing the black man and white man can do together is go to Vietnam and fight? No, I think they can work this thing out. I don't believe in pushing anybody or anything. By the same token, I don't believe in being pushed either.
While most of you like the taste of Benson & Hedges 100s, some of you really appreciate the 3, 4, maybe even 5 moments more they give you. Benson and Hedges 100s, 3, 4, maybe even 5 moments more than king size.
A lot of Americans have just gone through a summer when they couldn't turn on their air conditioners on some hot days, and some people are worried that it may be the kind of winter when you can't turn up the radiator when it's cold. Today, before Congress, New York's Mayor John Lindsay said the whole East Coast faces the possibility of a winter fuel shortage involving all types of fuel unless something is done about it. And an administration spokesman said enough is being done.
The coal industry is headed for a near-record production year, but the customers want more, and the government is worried about a shortage. Coal energy becomes either heat or light or both when it's burned, not when it's sitting in a processing yard waiting for transport to some furnace. There's such a shortage of railroad coal cars that some mines have cut back production because they can't ship their coal. And some yards, like this one near Pittsburgh, build up huge stockpiles of processed coal they can't deliver. Air pollution codes, which reject high sulfur coal, and a series of strikes after the murder of mine workers leader Joseph Yablonski have also limited the amounts of available coal. In many areas, coal is the basic energy source. More than half the coal mined in this country goes to steam generating plants and produces electricity. Electric utilities everywhere handle huge quantities of coal and are trying to stockpile enough of it to be sure they don't run out, to be sure they have power during a cold snap when the demand for electric energy is high. This plant uses 4,000 tons a day under a normal power load and cannot get enough coal from anywhere at any decent price to build up a comfortable reserve. The utilities will buy and store against cold weather anything the coal companies can produce. And the coal companies are perfectly willing to produce as much as the industry needs, but they can't deliver it. And in very cold weather, that lack of ability to deliver the product may be critical. Steve Delaney, NBC News on the Allegheny River.
There also may be a shortage this winter of railroad cars that carry coal, since many of these cars are tied up at seaports where they are involved in shipments to other countries. Congressional leaders of both parties agreed today to recess on October 14th to campaign for office and then return to the Congress on November 16th. It'll be the first lame duck session of the Congress in 20 years. The New York Stock Exchange followed up yesterday's big gain with a more modest one today. The Dow Jones Industrials went up almost 6 points and the value of an average share, 10 cents. On the American Exchange, an average share gained 8 cents. In Mexico, they take painting and politics very seriously, and both are likely to be hot and bright colored. You can't go to jail in Mexico for bad painting, although that's an idea, but you can be put away for politics. And here is the story of a man who has served his time for his political views and gone right on painting.
David Alfaro Siqueiros ranks with Picasso among the great painters of our time. For Mexico, he's both a source of pride for his genius and an embarrassment for his politics. A communist all his adult life, Siqueiros, now 74, was exiled by a Mexican government and jailed more than 20 times. Art and politics merge in Siqueiros' painting. His themes, human suffering, human progress, and revolution. His latest and largest is called the Poliforum. It's to be a convention hall attached to a hotel and is nearing completion after 5 years of work. Siqueiros' art, executed with the help of a team of assistants, will cover an area equal to 1.5 football fields. The Poliforum is called the world's largest painting. Actually, it's more than a painting in the traditional sense, because it incorporates painting, sculpture, and architecture in a unified conception. The mural's title is The March of Humanity. It begins with misery. A lynched Negro symbolizes the effects of prejudice. A political leader in a clown's costume urges the faceless masses to fight for what Siqueiros calls the bourgeois democratic revolution. Following the Marxist dialectic, the painting then shows chaos emerging from political democracy. A volcano erupts. A mythical evil spirit attacks a woman. This section of the mural is called Toward the Revolution of the Future. It concludes with the emergence of the new man and the new woman under the symbol of the Red Star. In 1967, Siqueiros won the Lenin Peace Prize. He donated the cash award to the people of North Vietnam. For all his leftist ideology, Siqueiros is fond of the American people and American intellectuals. He regrets that because of his politics, he can't visit the United States where he lived for many years. He admits a deep debt to American technology, which provided him with new materials and techniques to apply to his art. Tom Streithorst, NBC News, Mexico City.
And thank you and good night for NBC News.